Welcome back to the program. The recent events in Boston once again raise questions about the place of Islam in modern American society. The impacts for Muslims trying to live and practice their faith in the U.S. continue to run headlong into popular misconceptions about that faith. One of the places this is playing out in a positive way is at Zaytuna College, the first Muslim four-year undergraduate liberal arts college founded in Berkeley in 2008. My guest, Scott Korb, who teaches writing at New York University in the New School, spent time with the college's inaugural class and wrote about the first year of Zaytuna College in his new book, Light Without Fire, The Making of America's First Muslim College. It is my pleasure to welcome Scott Korb to the program today. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Great to have you here. In many ways, the founding of this college and its existence has gotten arguably less attention than one might expect, given some of the events in the country over the past several years. Talk a little bit about that first.
Well, I think when the school opened in 2010, if there was any media hype or media attention focused on Islam, it was at the Cordoba Center, Cordoba Institute in New York, which was being called the Ground Zero Mosque, you may remember.
Of course.
And that was actually drawing all the attention, at least in terms of people trying to find negative things to say about institutions, about Muslim institutions sprouting up in the country. I think that in part had something to do with it, that the nation's attention was somewhere else, or the media's attention maybe was somewhere else. Mine certainly wasn't. And another thing that I think had something to do with the school not being a controversial project has to do with the way in which it sort of came out of a community rather than sort of appearing to pop up out of nowhere. The people in the Bay Area have had long relationships with the founders of the college. Before it had been a college, it was something known as the Zaytuna Institute, which was founded in the mid-90s by one of the founders of the college, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. And he has had a long relationship with many people in the Bay Area religious community, not only the Muslim community. And so when plans really started getting underway to move from a campus in Hayward, which is where they originally were with the Institute, and move it up to Berkeley, I think it was Zaytuna itself was well enough known in that area so as not to seem out of place or seem to be, like I said, sort of coming out of nowhere. There was nothing when Fox News first reported about this, about the school, one of the guests on the show referred to the founding of Zaytuna as a kind of a stealth jihad, right? Well, in the Bay, there was nothing stealth about what Zaytuna was doing, and around the country, I mean, it should be known there's nothing stealth about what they're doing. They had a longstanding relationship, and I think when you do that, when you already feel like you're part of the community, it founding a college doesn't seem controversial, and I think shouldn't.
Talk a little bit about the founders and a little bit about what their vision was in founding this college. Did they imagine it to be an evangelical institution, or did they have a more secular idea in mind? And in many ways, that's the way it's evolving in terms of its focus on liberal arts.
I think I wouldn't describe it as either evangelical insofar as I don't think that the school is intending to go out and convert people to Islam. It doesn't have that sort of evangelical approach, but I also wouldn't call it secular. They teach subjects now that that you would find in a secular liberal arts college, but all of the classes, at least the ones that I've attended and the ones that I've spoken with the students about, and also the founders about, are inflected in some way by Islam, and so. It's very clearly a religious institution that is trying to take advantage of what the founders, in particular Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, believes is the power of the liberal arts education. And he's talking about a liberal arts education that goes back to like a great books program where you do grammar, logic, rhetoric, arithmetic, geometry, music, astronomy, what are known as the trivium and the quadrivium. I mean, these, for him, a deep education in a common core classes will create a student who is well prepared to go face the world that is out there waiting for him or her. And also, if these classes are inflected by Islam, and if Islam is at the center of the school, and if discussions of the Prophet and discussions of law and discussions of the Quran are at the center of the school, then in addition to this well-roundedness in terms of their academic life, the founders believe that with the Islamic training as well, they're also preparing morally sound individuals. And that balance of how do we train people, how do we train the minds, and how do we train the soul is sort of equally important in the school. And that goes for all three of the founders, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, Imam Zaid Shakir, and Dr. Hatem Bazian. They're all sort of equally committed to graduating Zaytuna College students into a world where they can basically go do whatever kinds of work they want. It seems less important to any of the founders in the school's philosophy now that they're trained specifically to be any one thing, that they can go do what they want in the world and also be not only academically prepared to do so, but also be morally prepared to do so. I can also talk a little bit more, you asked about the founders themselves. Sheikh Hamza founded the Institute back in, like I said, the mid-90s. And back then, it was much more ad hoc. They were doing programming sort of based on ideas that he might have at this point and ideas that he might have at this point. We want an Arabic class. We want Islamic law and theology class. I would like to start a literary journal or magazine to sort of capture all of what the knowledge that's being produced here. And in time, through his partnership with Imam Zaid and his further partnership with Hatem Bazian, who had been around the Institute from the beginning, they decided that ad hoc education, which was really community-based, didn't have the potential that a full four-year liberal arts college would. And I think by potential, I mean it didn't have the possibility to have a national impact. To draw students from all over the country to, at some point soon, grant degrees to these students and then send them back out into the country to have these you know, various effects that they hope that the Zaytuna graduates will achieve.
Did they have a model of other colleges that they wanted to emulate, someplace like Wheaton College, for example?
It's interesting. In talking with them, Wheaton wasn't the example that they would have offered, although it's one that I've thought of, because of the centrality of the religious life at the center of the school and the whole thing sort of centering on the religious beliefs as well as religious practice. The day is often regulated by when prayers are meant to happen. You know, classes will take breaks for prayer life and so on. But from the beginning, say, for instance, at the convocation of the school in 2010, their aspirations were grand. Imam Zaid, in his convocation speech, told the students that they were there to make history. And then we hear references to Harvard and Princeton and Yale all being founded as religious institutions. And so they had, from the outset, that real aspirational ambition. Now, I think other colleges that get mentioned in terms of, who looks like this, what's the religious liberal arts college out there, you have places like Brandeis, founded as a Jewish institution, but a liberal arts college. You have Fordham University here in New York, where I am, Catholic college. And I think that Zaytuna in time, if they begin to reach out even further into the community and attempt to draw students who are not Muslim, I think that will be a way for them to approach looking more like a Brandeis or looking more like a Fordham. They talk in terms of curriculum, though, they refer very specifically to, Shikhamza refers historically to Columbia College and the Great Books program that developed there, mm-hmm. Largely under the influence of Mark Van Doren, who is a personal hero of Shikhamza's. And then in our own day, well, the Columbia College still does the Great Books. In our own day, they look at St. John's College, which has two branches, one in Maryland and one in New Mexico, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And that, for them right now, that is the model for the curriculum. And the students talk about it and the faculty talk about it. I should say, St. John's College is not a religious institution, by the way. It just has that name.
Where does Islamic law and theology fit into the curriculum right now?
It is a piece of the curriculum that has recently shifted, actually. There was it's still taught and it's still very much emphasized. But there was a time, the first 2 years, really the first 2.5 years of the school, when Islamic law and theology was a major. You could major in Islamic law or theology, or you could major in Arabic. And what they've done is, while not reducing the class time spent in those topics, they've gotten rid of the idea of majors, and they focus very specifically on this Zaytuna College curriculum, this degree, which is a unified curriculum, again based on the grammar, logic, rhetoric, and so on. But they're taking classes in Islamic law, they're taking classes in theology, and progressing through each class as a cohort.
Is there a sense of what they are preparing students for? Are there students that are going to come out of there as Islamic scholars? Are they going to pursue other avenues in other areas? Talk a little bit about what you found in terms of the students and why they're there.
I think the students, why the students are there primarily, and this was my sense mostly the time I spent there in the first year, the students were there in large part to have access to the sacred knowledge that they believe is transmitted through these scholars. That Sheikh Hamza and Imam Zayd, in particular, and then other scholars at the school as well, possess something of great value and are incredible teachers. And so there's part of the students in that first class that were drawn, part of what drew the students in that first class was that connection, was connecting with the people and the sacred knowledge that they believe that they possess. Now, in time, as the classes have grown, there's now 31 people in the school. The school started with 15. There's been some... there's been the addition of new faculty, and there's been, just by the nature of the bigger population, I think less focus on the individual scholars and more focus on the classes themselves. So I think the students now, while they love their opportunity once a week to have a class with Sheikh Hamza, are not quite so specifically or exclusively geared up about the individuals who are leading the classes. I think they're really going for, at this point, the knowledge. And in terms of what they'll do someday, I'm sure that Zaytuna will produce Islamic scholars. I'm also sure Zaytuna will produce elementary school teachers and college professors and lawyers and eventually, doctors and professionals of all stripes.
How does Arabic language proficiency fit into the equation and into the curriculum?
Arabic proficiency was the real, in terms of academics, not in terms of organizing a college, which is an incredible feat in that first year. There were, administrative hurdles they had to overcome and so on. But Arabic, in terms of the academics, was the biggest hurdle that the school had to try to leap in that first year. Students are meant coming in to have some Arabic proficiency, and in order to be enrolled in the college, you either have to demonstrate that proficiency or enroll in an Arabic intensive course that they offer every summer. In fact, the Arabic intensive course is much bigger in terms of population of students than the college itself at this point. And in that first year, as they were figuring out the curriculum, they determined that some of the students were not quite up to par. And so in order to get them up to par, they had to sort of break the students up into two different classes. There were the students who were higher achieving in Arabic and the students who were lower achieving. And they brought in tutors and tried to bring those other students up to the level. And I think now they're finding that the increased I think they found an increased focus on emphasizing Arabic is helping the students come along much more quickly. Although it is still a fear in them, in some of the students, that maybe the Arabic won't quite get there as quick as they need to. It's an incredibly difficult language, and some of the students have come in, you know, except for the Arabic intensive course, with nothing prior. The language of the school is English, but I know the scholars would want to be able to teach more of their classes in Arabic, and I think as the students progress up into their third and fourth year, my sense is that will probably be happening.
As you ventured into this project, Scott, did you find that the founders and the students wanted their story to be told? What issues did you face in that regard?
My involvement with the school began with a student that I had as a professor at New York University, and he had gone through a pilot program at Zaytuna, which was a seminary program. And when he came back after 4 years, when he's originally from New York, and when he came back to New York to sit in my classroom at NYU, he started telling stories about his own life, and he started telling stories about the life of the school and the life of the scholars. And that was what interested me. That's what interested me from the get-go, was that there was this brand new experiment out there in the Bay going on that I knew nothing about, and that most of the people I knew nothing about. And I'm involved in the world of religion. I mean, it's what I do. It's what I write about. It's almost exclusively what I think about, you know. And so I very badly wanted to take my lessons from my student that he had stories to tell and see whether that same thing existed out in California. And when I went to the school and I went to the students, very, very quickly, we arranged these long meetings where I would ask them very open-ended questions, and then the stories would just sort of unfold. And then I got stories from students past, where they were coming from, why they decided to go to Zaytuna. And then as the year went on, I started to get a sense that there was a story happening here about this community specifically, that all these individual students very quickly connected with one another. And I found that to be I found it to be moving and incredibly impressive that these, you know, many of the students were 18, 19, left home, some of them all the way across the country, and found this new home out of Zaytuna. And that was very impressive. And those were stories that they were very willing and very eager and excited to tell at the time. Now, in terms of, you know, getting into the school, I like to think there's one metaphor that I like to think about. When I arrived at the school, and my student, who was teaching Arabic out at the school at the time, introduced me around, I found that I had never opened a door for myself when I was out there. That there was this sense of generosity and welcoming, general basic politeness, where I would approach a door and suddenly there would be a student there opening it for me, which surprised me to a certain degree. And that's the doors were open to me. And I just think that the same goes metaphorically, that the doors to the school were wide open, that there was nothing anyone was hiding at Zaytuna, I got into the classrooms, I got into the dorm rooms, I went and had lunch, I went to the fundraisers, I went to the mosque. And everyone seemed to try to be helping me tell the story. And that was, to me, one of the most heartening things about doing the project at all, was to have this community who was so welcoming and so open.
You mentioned fundraisers. The economics seemed to be an ongoing issue for the school. Talk a little about that.
Yeah, much of that first year, while I was reporting, I would find myself in the classroom, or I'd find myself in the dorms talking with the apartments, talking with the students. And then later during my trip, we would all go to a fundraiser together. And the emphasis on that, it's hard for me to see that it's sort of waned at all. My most recent trip to the school was in March, and I had intended on visiting a class, a logic course taught by Sheikh Hamza, and it was co-taught with another professor there. And I had also hoped to be able to see Hatem Bazian, but when I arrived, Hatem Bazian was already across the country in Florida at a fundraising dinner. The next night, Sheikh Hamza would be joining him, so he didn't teach class. He ended up traveling that day. And so there isn't a big endowment. You know, no one donor has said, here's all of the money you will need to run this college. And so they find themselves constantly on the pursuit of dollars, which I think is no easy task. Now, their success has been running a school for 3 years without any economic hiccups. In fact, only progress in terms of the expansion of the school. They've been able to hire new faculty. They've been able to hire new administrators, some student support staff. And then very recently, they purchased with cash, which they're very, very pleased to say. They're very proud of this. They've purchased with cash their own permanent campus. They had been renting classroom space from a Baptist seminary, which is located in Berkeley. And now, beginning in this year, to a limited extent, they've moved into a new campus, which is located among the other seminaries in Berkeley, those of which make up what's called the Graduate Theological Union. And so they've now established themselves physically in this new building among the religious community in the city that they call home, which, you know, money may be tight, but they're doing it, you know, which I find impressive, to say the least.
What role is there for women?
When I went to Zaytuna, I spoke with a woman who was doing a PhD work at Zaytuna, doing a kind of more of an academic study than what I was doing. And she is a Muslim and had known members of the community for some time. And I asked her one piece of advice very early on when I met her. I said, what's the story here that I really need to tell? And she said, focus on the women. You really have to tell the story of the women. And so in my work at the school, I found that very often the women at the school, in the first year there were 9 women and 6 men, so the majority of the class were women, they were the first to invite me to tell their stories. They were the first to share with me their difficulties in making this transition to college. They were the first to share with me even their poetry, for instance. I mean, you know, they sort of to open up their personal sides as well. They, in many ways, represented for me the emotional heart of the school, which I found compelling, a really compelling piece of the story as I was out there. And one of the most delightful things that happened to me while I was in Berkeley reporting on Zaytuna was the day before Easter, the year I was out there, I got a text message, which is very often how I would communicate with the students there. And one of the women said, Scott, we would like to go to Easter Mass with you tomorrow. Now, they knew me as having come from a Christian background, but I'm not a practicing Catholic at the time. At the moment, and I wasn't at the time, and I decided, well, of course I could take you to Easter Mass. It was an easy decision for me to make. So we gathered, and it was 5 women, and we walked to the church, and none of the women had ever been in a church before or never been to a Catholic service before. We walked up in the side pew, and we turned in, and I, being very familiar with what a Catholic Mass is like, kneeled in the or sat in the pew in front of them and explained what would happen and so on. And then I go and I slide back into the pew, and one of the women turns to me and turns to the other women as well, and she finds a statue and points to it, a statue of Mary off in the distance. And Mary in Islam is a revered woman, the only woman mentioned in the whole of the Quran by name. And this woman, Fatima is her name, she points at Mary up in the distance and she says, look, Mary's in hijab. And that was just so profound for me, that these women were always looking for connections, you know, outside of their own community into other communities, but then trying to find those ways to bring those communities together. And that's not to say the men weren't willing to do that, but I didn't have as many moments like that with the men, where I saw this real effort to draw connections between what goes on in the world of Islam in America and what goes on outside of that. And in fact, you know, in Berkeley right now, I don't think that those worlds are separate. You know, they really are. Daytona College really has become a part of the community, and I think will become an increasingly important part of the community as the years go on.
And how much of the success of Zaytuna is as a result of it being in Berkeley, in the Bay Area, and that sense of openness and acceptance that is so much a part of that?
Yeah, I think that does have a lot to do with it. I think there was already a very vibrant Islamic community in the area. As I said, Sheikh Hamza, Imam Zaid, and Dr. Hatim were already well known in the area. But in addition to the openness that Berkeley offers, the welcoming nature of Berkeley, which is something that I felt too, having never been there before working on this book. What Zaytuna and Hatim Bazian is really central to this and key to this. What he found was important about Berkeley, perhaps even more than the openness of the city, was the academic weight of the town. That in Berkeley, if Zaytuna could develop relationships with Graduate Theological Union and with Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, if they could develop relationships, that would only benefit the school. And that would only, in their minds, benefit the Theological Union and Berkeley both. That it was important for academic purposes to establish themselves in Berkeley.
Scott Korb, his book about Zaytuna College is Light Without Fire, The Making of America's First Muslim College. It's just out from Beacon Press. Scott, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
It's my pleasure, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.